Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new edition of the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. It's great to have you guys here with us this week. My name is Dan Mott, and I'm the AV production director for Pro Football Weekly, typically spinning the dials for the fellas each week. We're trying out a new format to bring you guys the best quality of the PFW Chicago podcast, and we should be coming through your device loud and clear this week. A lot has happened up at Hallis Hall since Bob Laguerre and Hub Arkish joined Arthur Arkish last week to talk Bears. Rookie minicamp was this past weekend, and voluntary OTAs began this week. So we have a lot to discuss. Bob Laguerre has the week off, and so Arthur Arkish and Hub Arkish are joining us on the line this week. And guys, how is it going?
Going well. I got to figure out how I get Bob's job and get a week off. But other than that, it's all going really well.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how last week's podcast was actually just a week ago, because it feels like it was about 3 years ago. But that's because a lot has been going on, and not with just the Bears, a lot at Pro Football Weekly. We're excited to recap it all, much of it on this podcast, and get things going up on the website.
Well, Hub, we'll start with some initial takeaways from what we've seen over the past week with some of these practices. What have you kind of been observing being up there at Hallis?
Well, I think since we last talked, a full rookie veteran and rookie tryout mini camp, and then, of course, the first day of media availability at OTAs was this past Wednesday. And really, I go back to the rookie camp first. I think people don't understand that when they do that, you just assume you talk about the 7 draft choices, maybe the 15 undrafted rookie free agents they brought in, but you really can't run a practice with 20, 25 guys. So there were literally 38 kids there who were trying out, and there was a half a dozen veterans who've been in the league for 3, 4, 5 years trying out just to become either an undrafted rookie free agent or to get claimed and offered a veteran contract, at least to go to camp. And there were two guys who jumped out. One was Jeremy Hall, a kid from, I want to say, South Florida. I noticed him immediately because they listed him at 6'5", 340 pounds. And he didn't look 340 pounds at all from where we were viewing. And then as I got close to him after practice, I realized this kid was huge, and I was impressed with the way he was moving. That was really on Saturday. And then a little bit to my surprise, on Monday, it was announced that they had offered him a contract, and he is the newest of the Bears' undrafted rookie free agents. Again, 6'5", 340 pounds. Now, they're playing him at guard. He certainly got right tackle size. He's a real long shot to make the team, obviously, so a kid to keep an eye on. And then Melvin McCants, an offensive tackle, was bounced around the NFL for 5 years. This would be his sixth year in the league if he made the team. But he just stood out because he's a five-year veteran and stood out from everybody else on the field. He has also now been signed. And, Arthur, I think that's significant because there's so much focus with the Bears' offensive line on the interior of the offensive line. You draft James Daniels at 39. You're going to play him at guard instead of center. You're going to keep Whitehair at center, even though he didn't play well there last year. You've got the injuries to Kyle Long, Eric Kush coming back. Nobody's talked about the tackles, and the Bears are extremely mediocre at tackle. Bobby Massey, I think, is fairly good at right tackle, not great in pass protection, occasionally needs some help. I think Charles Leno is a potential problem at left tackle. Now, I'm not suggesting that McCants is going to take one of their positions, but at least along with Bradley Soule, he adds some veteran depth now to an area that obviously the Bears agree is of some concern.
Yeah, for sure. I haven't been up at Hallis Hall, unfortunately, so I'm not really going to speak to what these kids did on the field, but and especially in these OTA periods where there's certainly no contact allowed. You're not going to see DBs bumping, running, or real blocking technique occurring. But I do think it's interesting. You mentioned the two offensive linemen who earned contracts after their tryouts. The other position where there's a couple guys is in the defensive backfield with John Franklin III and Tyron Holloway. So I just think it's interesting that you look at the positions that maybe got kind of neglected a little bit throughout the offseason, and now maybe the Bears are going to be mining for those gems in particular in those spots to bolster competition. And these are obviously guys, and Matt Fleming was the fifth player to earn a contract after that mini camp wide receiver, are guys that we'll be watching particularly close.
Yeah, and one other note about John Franklin, and Dan was up at Hallis Hall with me on Wednesday doing some shooting when we talked to Prince Amukamara after practice, and Prince was asked about the difficulty of switching positions after college, and it was pointed out Franklin's never played defensive back. He was a wide receiver in college. He is trying to make the transition to the secondary. I don't know if that's on the advice of his agents or scouts or teams or whatever. Obviously, he showed enough for the Bears to bring him into camp. Unlike a Cam Meredith who switched from from quarterback to wide receiver his junior year in college, Franklin is a young man that the Bears saw enough in to offer a contract to come to camp to play a position he's never played before. So he will be an interesting story, if nothing else. And then I just talked really about the rookie and veteran tryout camp over the weekend at the first OTA. We did get to watch the entire practice. Again, this is guys running around in their underwear, as John Fox used to like to say. And you know, you can't really see much, but the one thing that did jump out immediately is that Roquan Smith is every bit as athletic and fast, Arthur, as people suggested he was, the best linebacker coming out of college football this year. He clearly has already started to pick up some of the playbook. He looked very good, very comfortable on the field. And then the other thing, which I think Dan mentioned in the introduction, which I wrote about midweek, I think it was in Thursday's papers, is Kyle Long, apparently for the first time in a few years, is gaining some confidence in his health. Matt Nagy talked about it. They said even rehabbing three different surgeries that he's well ahead of schedule, as is Allen Robinson. But just staying with Long in this offensive line topic for a few minutes. That may have been the most encouraging news of all from the Bears' first week of OTAs, because clearly a healthy Kyle Long is going to be critical to significant success for the Bears' offense.
Well, let me pull Dan Mott back into the conversation. I know Dan's in studio and spent a lot of time up at Hallis. One of the interesting things, Dan, that I heard, or I should just say I read from some of these transcripts and hearing Matt Nagy talk about Kyle Long in particular, or I guess answering in particular a question about Kyle Long and his position. If I had to guess, I would imagine it came from none other than Hub Arkish. But I liked Matt Nagy's response, saying that they really want these guys. No one is getting locked into a specific position. The question was thrown to Nagy: is Kyle Long going to focus on right guard and kind of get back to where he was making his money in years one and two in the NFL? But interesting to hear Matt Nagy, and it's not different than what John Fox used to say, but they're cross-training these guys, and maybe nowhere is that more important than along the offensive line, where you're only going to have seven up on Sunday, obviously, and if you get in a pinch, and Bears fans know well from what they've watched the past couple years on the field, you certainly have to have some flexibility, have to have some guys who are able to move around at least. Maybe it's been long enough, guys, that we need to just quickly remind everyone, Kyle Long is the most accomplished NFL football player on the Bears roster, and he had three surgeries this offseason, hasn't played a full season, Hub, in a couple years now, and I think that was kind of the impetus of your column, which we'll get into a little bit more. They need the old Kyle Long back. Let's be clear here. Eric Kush was really good in a pinch-hitting role 2 years ago, but to kind of tie this whole thing together, and we'll get to Allen Robinson here in a minute as well, maybe the second most accomplished NFL player on the Bears roster. We're not going to know exactly what this thing looks like or what its division is, what it's supposed to look like, unless these guys are full go and back to their old selves.
You know, this may be selfish, guys, but what I want to know is how Arthur figured out in the middle of what we like to refer to lovingly in media parlance as a gangbang, which is when 20 or 30 of us are gathered around one coach or one player firing questions at him and shuffling and elbowing to get in, that I was the one who asked the question about whether Kyle Long is staying at right guard or not. And the reason I asked it is relevant to this conversation and exactly what Arthur just said. You look at where Matt Nagy has come from, and all the excitement now is about what he's going to do on offense and the offense that they ran in Kansas City. And they did it with a very solid, athletic, versatile offensive line, but really no stars, although right tackle Mitchell Schwartz is emerging as a Pro Bowler and an All-Pro now. And when you look at the Bears' offensive line, you know, we hope that they made a great choice in James Daniels at number 39, but who knows? Cody Whitehair followed an all-rookie season at center with, quite frankly, a less-than-mediocre season last year, although he was shuffled back and forth from center to guard. And you don't have a starting left guard right now. I think it's likely that either James Daniels or Eric Kush is going to claim that position. And on their best days,
you've got Bobby Massey and Charles Leno are going to be NFL journeymen, so to speak. So basically, the offensive line needs an anchor. It needs some star power. It needs somebody in each unit who can take over a football game when the game is on the line. And in the case of the offensive line, that's going to be Kyle Long, or it's not going to be anybody. And then I think the other piece of it with Kyle Long, guys, is that people don't realize he's already 30 years old. You know, only 5 years in the league, and we think of these kids as coming in, you know, in 21 and 22. So much is made about James Daniels. They just drafted in the second round. He hasn't turned 20 yet. So after 5 years in the league, he'll be 25. Allen Robinson's going into his fifth year. He hasn't turned 25 yet. In the case of Kyle Long, he was an older rookie, and his prime is now. If he is going to become the all-pro, arguably the best guard in football, some people thought at the end of his second year in the league. If he's going to be that player, it's got to happen this year, next couple years, or it may not happen at all, and there will have been a missed opportunity there.
And we, and Dan, just to quickly interject, we are big Kyle Long fans on this podcast as a person and as a player, but we've mentioned it before, and we'd be remiss if we didn't at least mention the possibility that we might have already seen Kyle Long's prime. We're all hoping that's not the case, but because the accumulative effect of these injuries, because Long was a little bit of an overaged rookie coming in, who knows? We're going to find out probably this season, but certainly the Bears fans have to hope that they still have not already seen the best from Kyle Long, because boy, was he pretty dominant by his second season in the league. So we'll have to wait and see. And then I just have to chuckle. I'm guessing Hub has been a little busy to listen to last week's podcast, which he did not appear on. But I also, maybe his dogs listen. It sounds like one of them. But I also mentioned last week that I had a feeling it was either Hub or Bob Laguerre who asked the question about Roquan Smith's size. And I believe I had that one right too. So it's almost like Hub and I have known each other for a while, Dan.
Well, and his what would Molly be? His dog niece is commenting on it right now, Dan. So I apologize about that. I guess you get to know each other after. Well, Arthur's never known anybody in his life longer than me, so maybe that's how he figured it out. You know, guys, the other thing about Kyle Long, and the reason I did ask the question, is coming off that second season, and really from the day he came into the league, and remember, in his very limited experience at Oregon, he was a tackle, and they moved him to guard because it was the only way he could get on the field, and he asked for the chance to play it. But he is such a unique athlete with such tremendous size that he arguably could be one of the best left tackles in football. And when they made the move his third year to right tackle, I wasn't really sure why they did that instead of going right for left tackle. Again, it was a different, badly failed coaching staff. You know, but the experiment never got completed because they had injuries at guard. They had to move him back inside. He was struggling. And so I continue to, in a best case scenario, if Kyle Long is healthy, he's going to be one of the best guards in football. I have no doubt about that. You know, there are still improvements he can make in his technique, but when it comes to his strength and his athleticism, he's a bit of a freak. And that comes from watching these games with other all-pro, former, you know, Pro Bowl offensive linemen. I do a post-game show on 670 The Score in Chicago for 2 hours after every Bears game, and I work with perennial all-pro center Olin Krutz and all-pro right tackle James Big Cat Williams. They know this better than I do, and they just marvel at Kyle Long's God-given ability. So there's no question why he's one of our favorite players. But right now, and again, through no fault of his own, it's the injuries, it's really more unfulfilled potential than anything else.
He's got to be the Bears' second longest tenured player now? Is that, and it sounds crazy, but I think he is after Sherrick McManus, right?
I think they made the McManus trade in 12. I think they arrived the same year. I think McManus has been in the league longer because he was in Houston for a couple of years, but I think they're either tied for second for longest tenured, or he is the second longest tenured behind McManus.
Right.
You know, obviously Robbie Gould was forever, and after that mistake was made, the youngsters became the longest tenured guys as well.
Hub, we spent some time talking about Long's injury. Shifting gears a little bit to Robinson, where is he at with sort of his rehab and getting back on the field?
Well, he did have a reconstructed ACL. There is some debate as to whether the MCL was torn as well, and that's always a consideration, and we don't always get this information. It is the athlete and the player's private medical information, and, you know, other than a knee operation and an ACL, they don't need to go into all the details, but it does make a difference because an ACL can be anywhere from a 9 to an 18-month injury. Now, if there is any good news in having an injury like that, it's that in the case of Robinson, it was the third play of the season last year. It was still the second week in September. The surgery was done fairly soon thereafter. They do wait for the swelling to go down. So by the time you get to opening day, he's at 12 months, which is usually considered a reasonable period of time to expect to be able to go full speed and be 90-95% recovered. The reality is that if he's going to be the Allen Robinson that he was in 1,400 yards and or maybe it was 1,500 yards and 14 touchdowns, whatever it was an all-pro season, that isn't going to be till mid-season, maybe even next year. But in terms of being ready to go, you're not going to see him do anything in any of these mini camps. You're going to see him do very little early in Bourbonnais, and I'd be surprised if he plays at all in the preseason. Maybe they get him a couple reps in that third preseason game if they think he's ready. What we were told by Matt Nagy this week is that in terms of where they expect him to be, that he's way ahead of schedule, that he is doing things that they weren't hoping for him to do really until they got to training camp. So they're positive about it. They're excited about it. But there's just not going to be any taking chances with this asset. And so don't expect really to see him until the opening game of the season.
Who do you see as sort of the starting receiver then at that point, if it's going to take several more weeks for Allen to get up to speed? You're talking, you know, mid-season.
You know, guys, the main topic and possibly the great controversy, as much as people want to make light of it and discuss it, is going to be Kevin White, because Kevin White and Allen Robinson are basically the same receiver, 6'3", 215, 220 pounds. Maybe White's half an inch taller. White, when he came out of school, a little better speed. Robinson, a much better route runner and ball catcher, a much more developed player coming out of Penn State. When you look at the Bears haven't done a new depth chart yet, but I will tell you that that depth chart is most likely going to have White right behind Robinson on it, as opposed to as the starter on the other end. I know that Kevin White is completely healthy right now. Whether he can play receiver in the NFL or not, we just don't know. You know, I mean, as unfortunate as it is, and it's not his fault, and it's not Ryan Pace's fault. These are three different broken bones that happen, you know, but it's just horrible luck. You know, you can learn some things about running an NFL route tree and understanding the routes from watching for 3 years, but until you get to do it, you don't get better at it. He hasn't gotten to do it in NFL games. And, you know, Arthur, the other thing that I found a little alarming is that watching him in Bourbonnais last year before the shoulder injury, he didn't appear to be anything special, and he was healthy. At least the legs were fine, and he didn't appear to have the same speed that he had 2 years earlier when he arrived. Now, all of that said, he has been a workout warrior for the last 6 months. He looks incredible. And he's going to get every chance to get reps and to become either part of the three receiver package, because it doesn't really matter which ones are starters, or the starter across from Allen Robinson. But with Robinson out, my guess is you're going to see White running a lot of first team reps with Anthony Miller over on the other side, because Taylor Gabriel was clearly brought in to be number three. So not only is the Robinson rehab an outstanding opportunity for Kevin White to finally get over that hurdle, it's going to be an outstanding opportunity for the rookie Anthony Miller, assuming his foot is 100%, to earn significant playing time from his first game in the NFL.
What a fascinating offseason it's been for Kevin White, not only as he tries to recover from the broken shoulder blade, and as we've talked about on this podcast, the dude looks like a Greek god again. He's posting photos during his recovery, and he really looks the part. But really interesting, because most guys who see their replacement drafted, essentially, and that's what happened with when Allen Robinson was signed and Anthony Miller's drafted in round two and Taylor Gabriel got whatever it was, $12 million guaranteed. It's human nature to kind of be like, well, you know, shit, I'm on notice here. In the case of Kevin White, I almost feel like it kind of removes a lot of the pressure from him that he's already had to deal with and obviously hasn't really had an opportunity to really try and answer for because of the injuries. But look, they paid a ton for all of these guys, and They don't do that unless they're envisioning major roles for them. So it's almost up to Kevin White at this point to be the surprise of the bunch, but maybe not having to be viewed as that former seventh overall pick who's verging on bust status and now just kind of viewed as this guy who's almost your house money candidate. Who knows? Maybe it unlocks the best in Kevin White. I know I'm pulling for it, and we're not even supposed to be cheering in the press box, guys.
Well, and Dan, the one other thing that our listeners should understand, and again, you know, they can blame Kevin White or the Bears, but it's not their fault. There's basically a rookie salary cap in the NFL, or it's not really a salary cap so much as a slotting system that these contracts are for the most part preordained when these kids get drafted. And as the seventh overall pick in the draft four seasons ago, if you count this season, Kevin White, you know, was guaranteed over $20 million, and he's going to get it all. He is guaranteed almost $7 million this year. They're going to pay him whether he becomes the player or not. But if they're going to pay him, they're not going to pay him to watch. They're not going to pay him to sit at home. And so he is going to get every opportunity, at least for one more year, unless they can work out a trade, which seems unlikely. He is going to get every opportunity to be the player they hoped they were getting when they drafted him 3 years ago.
Well, I know that in declining the fifth-year option on him, with this pressure off, he could come back and have a pretty outstanding year. Wouldn't it be something if he actually does wind up being the guy that we hoped he would be when he was drafted, and for whatever reason winds up, you know, going to another team? I mean, can you imagine, you know, just having it would is sort of be just a real surreal kind of thing, because he spent so much time injured with the Bears, and to come out and have an outstanding year and then, you know, wind up finding himself in a position where he gets offered, you know, something else. I mean, is that something that Bears fans could potentially see?
You know, guys, I think the realistic objective analysis of this is that what could happen from what we did see before the injuries is that Kevin White is not going to be the player that the Bears hoped he would be when they drafted him. I just haven't seen it to suggest that he's going to be. I mean, you know, Julio Jones was the fourth pick overall. Antonio Brown was a sixth rounder, so this stuff doesn't really matter. But when you talk about what you want at number seven, you want somebody you can discuss in the same vein as Julio Jones, as DeAndre Hopkins, as Michael Thomas, as Mike Evans, the top guys in the league right now. We've seen nothing to suggest that Kevin White is going to be that. But there is every reason to believe, because of his speed and athletic ability, assuming the speed is still there, now that he's going to be the second wide receiver, that he's going to be the option on the other side of the field from Allen Robinson, who may at times command double teams and will command the other team's best corner, and White's never going to see that, that he can become a very effective weapon, can become a very productive number two, which would be a pretty clear explanation of why the Bears decided not to give the high tender and to pass on Cam Meredith.
I think that the best case scenario, much like Hub just said, is that I don't want to put words in Hub's mouth, but I just think Bears fans should temper expectations and just hope to get a healthy and productive contributor in Kevin White and not that absolute beast. But maybe to kind of punctuate this conversation and move on to the next subject, I do want to throw it back to Hub, or to both of you, because you guys were both in attendance. The one thing that should be popping at this time of year in shorts and without pads on is just pure speed and explosiveness. Has it appeared to either or both of you that Kevin White seems to have some of that back, Hub, what you said was even missing in Bourbonnais when he was healthy last year?
You know, honestly, Arthur, because the OTAs are so different, they didn't really show enough of it for us to get a feel. Okay. They practice three times a week over 3 weeks. We get each Wednesday. We'll get another look next Wednesday. But what they were doing this week, and I did at various times try and focus on them, they weren't showing that. They weren't doing that. What you've got right now, with a completely new offensive coaching staff, is it's all about installation. It's all about running plays. It's all about walkthroughs and timing. And I just didn't see him getting the opportunity to run a fly route or even to see how quickly he was coming off the line. It was more timing than anything else.
Guys, we'll shift our focus a little bit here to the defensive side of the ball. I know that we were talking earlier about Roquan Smith's speed. What really stood out on the defensive side?
Well, you know, and I think this is understandable. They're way ahead of the offense right now, because this is a lot of veterans in a veteran scheme. I mean, Vic Fangio spent the last 3 years putting this system in place. And with the exception of Roquan Smith, and of course, Mitch Unrein's not gone now, so you got Jonathan Bullard running first team. Jarrell Freeman's gone, so you had Nick Kwiatkowski getting first team reps. The secondary was intact from last year. So for the most part, you know, the defense is well ahead of the offense, and the defense looked pretty impressive at practice. They were flying around the football field. A lot has been made. I don't know if it's on our topic list for today, but a lot has been made is just about the attitude and the atmosphere that Matt Nagy is trying to install. And he's really focused, at least for now, on making sure that these guys are having fun, that they're loose, that there's no tension. And so there was a ton of smack talking going on out there, and a lot of it coming from the defense. And one of the things that emerged yesterday, as we heard from Danny Trevathan and Prince Amukamara, is that while he is not the most verbal of smack talkers, he apparently is one of the more prolific smack thinkers, and through passive aggressiveness, Vic Fangio has a pretty good way of being the root of all this. And so that was a lot of what we saw from the defense at practice, was having a blast, a lot of back and forth, and a very confident group that has reason to be, because even though, again, we don't necessarily see the star power, no Pro Bowlers in the group, they were the number 9 defense in the NFL last year, and with the 8th overall pick in the draft, the Butkus Award winner, you know, they figure to be better this year.
And Amukamara actually talked about how that some of that gives him the motivation. I know that he had said that Nagy was, as an offensive mind, was saying, you know, 20, we're coming for you. And he says he thrives off of that. He loves that. And I think you're right. There's just this aura of fun and excitement around the entire team that I think they're having a great time just enjoying sort of the atmosphere and the new vibes that some of these coaches are giving them.
You know, Arthur, one of the things I did notice this week, and I've wondered about it before, but it really jumped out this week, is we talked a lot about the importance of retaining Vic Fangio if, in fact, he wasn't going to get the head coaching job. He is really beginning to emerge as an almost Buddy Ryan-type presence without any of the acrimony or angst that existed between Ryan and Ditka. Clearly, Nagy and Van Fangio are very comfortable and happy together. And yet Fangio is a bit of an outsized presence right now for a coordinator as opposed to a head coach.
Yeah, he's almost become kind of a cult hero in this town, which is amazing when you think about the lack of team success that the Bears have had over the past 3 years. But everything from the continuity that we've talked about ad nauseum on this show to, you know, Prince Amukamara saying that really the biggest selling point in his return to Chicago was Vic Fangio. He really is a kind of a key cog of this whole thing. And what's exciting about it now is just with kind of, you know, obviously Roquan Smith, but otherwise sort of minimal upgrades to the group, outside upgrades. This is his group now. This is the unit that he has had ample opportunities to weigh in on and help kind of mold together. And I don't think that it should be unreasonable to expect them to, you know, not only build on last season, but maybe if everything falls right, to maybe verge on being a top 5, top 7 unit this year that can really take pressure off of the offense as it finds its footing. Because as much as everyone talks about the offseason of upgrades on offense and all the exciting playmakers that are finally here after years of just bland football, it is going to take time. We've talked about the newness of it all. Allen Robinson likely to miss most of the offseason is just one classic example of how this isn't going to be an instant coffee scenario come week one.
And guys, when Trevathan and Amukamara talked to the media on Wednesday, you could tell that they really love their coach. And really, I think one of them had said that those kinds of things make you want to go out there and you know, perform for them.
Yeah, you know, I think it was Danny Trevathan who said, you know, flat out the things that both Matt Nagy and Vic Fangio bring to the table are things that make them great leaders and guys that you're anxious not to let down and that you want to go out and follow. I think that, you know, it's clear the presence that Fangio is having on this defense. And it's interesting when you talk to some of the offensive players, we don't know much yet about Mark Helfrich or whether Brad Childress is going to have a big impact. I think for obvious reasons, they're looking more to Nagy, their head coach, for that. And if the Bears can get that same type of a blend, if you will, Arthur, between Nagy's offensive players feeling that way about him and the way that Fangio's defense is already in love with him. Some of these hoped-for comparisons between this year's Bears and last year's Rams start to look a little more real and have a better chance of being fulfilled, because certainly that's the way the leadership is working in Los Angeles right now with Sean McVay as the head coach and Wade Phillips, very much like Vic Fangio, as the independent and almost assistant head coach defense type leader of that unit.
Yeah, no doubt. And I love it when you kind of read the clippings out from LA or transcripts out there that Sean McVay never passes on an opportunity to praise Wade Phillips and to praise his special teams coach there too, and John Fossil. And the early return suggests it's going to be similar for Matt Nagy. One thing I am interested in, maybe a common denominator between Fangio and Trevathan and Nakamura, maybe all these guys have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder at this point. Fangio thought he did more than enough to get more than a token interview, one token interview in-house for a head coaching opportunity. Maybe he feels like he has more to show at this point. Danny Trevathan hasn't been able to stay on the field. He's been solid when he has, but maybe if he's played 16 games the past couple years, the Bears aren't as compelled to pick Roquan Smith. I'm not saying that'd be the case, but at least the possibility of that exists. And Prince Amakamura, let's not forget, a former first-round corner who hasn't really quite played up to that potential, and it was Kyle Fuller, not him, who just became one of the NFL's highest-paid cornerbacks. So maybe sort of an interesting kind of motivational scenario behind the scenes there with these three guys in particular, and how it'll kind of play out for this whole D as a unit.
You know, Arthur, I think you very well could be right about Fangio and about Trevathan. I think in the case of Amukamara, while he did not get the money Fuller got, he's got a $27 million bag of cash.
You're right. And some people kind of raised their eyebrows when they saw that. Yeah. The Bears had to find ways to spend that money. And yeah, no one's going to cry about Amakamura, because remember, he played on a one-year deal the past couple years. So maybe he is feeling a little more secure after this offseason. That's a good point.
I do think, though, Dan, also in response to what Arthur just said, it did not go unnoticed by me. I guess I'm assuming it didn't go unnoticed by many folks in the media. But on at least three different occasions at practice Wednesday, Matt Nagy referred to the defense as Vic's defense. And so Nagy is obviously very conscious of it and going out of his way to create the same kind of relationship with Fangio as McVay appears to have with Phillips out in Los Angeles.
As we wrap up talk about the defense, I want to spend just a moment talking about fifth-rounder Bilal Nichols and his stature and just kind of Hub, what have you seen from him? Is he kind of showing that that explosiveness that they were talking about as he came out of the draft?
Well, we haven't seen it on the field yet. It's just too soon. Again, the coaches talked about this last Saturday after practice in these rookie camps. They're, again, running around in their underwear. They're not hitting each other. So you really can't tell much in that regard. They do some fundamental drills. And even the same thing with the OTAs. What was so impressive to me about Nichols is that when you hear a guy is 6'5", 320, your first instinct in NFL lineman is that you expect a little bit of a bad body but plenty of power. This kid's ripped. I mean, this kid is, I'm going to guess that body fat content is below 15%. And then to hear him talk, he was very impressive. He's a very bright, well-spoken young man. He doesn't lack for confidence, but he's not cocky. And I came away very impressed by my brief meeting with him. Now, that has nothing to do with how good a football player he is. We'll see. And I think, Arthur, the one thing I keep going back to is when you look at Tariq Cohn coming out of the FCS MEAC from North Carolina A&T, he dominated that level of football. I mean, he was clearly one of the best weapons in FCS football, and that made him worthy of that fourth-round pick. Now, you look at Adam Shaheen, and Ashland is almost like a Division III, which doesn't even exist anymore, but even less than FCS. And yeah, it's a huge leap, but he was always by far the dominant player on the football field. When you look at Nichols' career at Delaware, he didn't dominate all that much. Where Nichols, impressed people and people became aware of him was when he got to the Senior Bowl, he performed fairly well against FBS competition. And when he got to the combine, he looked the part as much as everybody else. But as impressed as I was with him after meeting him at rookie camp, I still want to see a lot more of him in the preseason before we know if he can make what is truly a huge leap from FCS to the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But it is interesting that kind of the direct guy that he could potentially be competing against is Jonathan Bullard, who, of course, comes from Florida and has kind of those college skins on the wall production wise, not to mention just looking so great off the hoof. But it is interesting that Bilal Nichols, when you look at how they tested at the combine, Nichols looks like a slightly better athlete. He's actually slightly bigger entering the NFL. You know, the size and the athletic traits are comparable, or at least, you know, they're pretty close side by side, but Nichols actually seems to compare favorably. And while we've heard a lot about how Jonathan Bullard has kind of had to find his way in terms of work habits and making sure that he's doing the right things with his body and with the playbook, Bilal Nichols is a co-captain, a team captain coming from Delaware Hub, just kind of raved about the early returns on what his character seems to be like. So it seems like those types of things are working in his favor and certainly can't hurt him as he tries to find a role on this team earlier than later.
I do think, guys, one thing that you cannot measure and you definitely cannot coach, and Arthur makes a great comparison or analogy there. I watched a lot of Jonathan Bullard his last 2 years at Florida. He had one of the best first steps I've ever seen. He reminded me of Alex Brown, another guy out of Florida who had a pretty good career with the Chicago Bears. I mean, these guys just lightning off the football. And while Bullard is not the athlete or have the size or maybe even the strength as Nichols, all those things you can measure, we haven't seen anything yet to suggest that that Nichols has that innate ability and that lightning first step that it takes to be successful to play that position in the NFL.
Well, a few more minutes here on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast with Hub Arkish and Arthur Arkish. And guys, as OTAs continue, what essentially is this team going to be doing in the next couple weeks to essentially build its direction for the season? Hub, I'll start with you.
You know, Dan, it's two very different missions. It's all about installing the new scheme. It's all about every offensive player on the team is learning a new offense, not just the rookies and the new free agents. They're learning all the new terminology. There's going to be a lot more walkthrough type activity, a lot of classroom time when they get out on the field. A lot of it's going to be getting down timing, memorizing assignments. There will be some opportunities to see secondary players matched up with receivers, to see linebackers reacting to running plays. When it comes to offensive and defensive linemen, you just really can't tell anything when these guys are running around in their underwear, to use the Fox expression one too many times. Offensively, pretty much just all about attitude. It's watching the kids and the newcomers and Arthur trying to get a sense of their react to what they're seeing in front of them. You can test in athleticism. But other than that, you're just not going to see a whole lot.
Right. So try and keep the guys healthy. Make sure that they are understanding all these new schemes that are being installed. And I think just because you kind of follow the money with these things, I'm very curious too. And I know it'll be very gradual, but I'm just dying to know how Trubisky's rapport is coming along with the likes of Trey Burton and Taylor Gabriel, the guys that are healthy and on the field now and soon enough. Anthony Miller will join them. We mentioned Kevin White already. It'll be a while until Allen Robinson gets his turn. And of course, Tariq Cohen, Jordan Howard. I'm just really unique. I'm excited to see what has the makings of a unique offense, how it kind of all comes together, and how quickly Trubisky is able to maximize it.
All right. Well, that will do it for this week's episode of Pro Football Weekly Chicago. We want to thank you all for listening this week, and we hope that you head on over to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast if you've not already done so. You can also subscribe to our other shows, including the Pro Football Weekly podcast, talking all things NFL. We want to thank you, the listeners, for checking us out this week, and to Arthur Arkish and Hub Arkish for joining us to discuss the Bears. Also, a big thanks to Umphreys McGee for the use of our theme song, Glory, which can be found on UM Live, so go and download that if you enjoy listening to that track each week. I know Arthur does, and I know that we don't really get an opportunity to thank those guys enough for letting us spin their track each week on this podcast.
Go out and see them live. You're liable to run into me at a concert.
Once again, I'm Dan Mott for Arthur Arkish and Hub Arkish and Bob Laguerre. We want to thank you, and we will talk to you next week. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new edition of the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. It's great to have you guys here with us. Try this again.
Blow it!
I got tongue-tied there. Sorry about that.
That's terrible.
One.
Kid can't even read.